From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Democratic voters said the economy was on their mind today as they voted in Indiana and in North Carolina. NPR is projecting that Barack Obama is the winner in North Carolina.
And we're still waiting for final results in Indiana, where Hillary Clinton is hoping for a win. Exit polls show that race played a role in today's voting. White voters in Indiana and North Carolina leaned solidly toward Clinton, and blacks voted overwhelmingly for Obama. We are waiting for Barack Obama to address his supporters in Raleigh, North Carolina, at his victory rally there. In the meantime, we're going to talk with NPR political editor Ron Elving about today's results. Ron, the race has been called in North Carolina, but not so in Indiana. 2 hours now after the polls closed there, and we have seen over the night a double-digit Hillary Clinton lead shrinking steadily as more and more precincts are reporting.
That's right, Melissa. And we are also noting that some of the parts of the state that have yet to report or have yet to report fully are parts of the state where there are more African-American voters. For example, Marion County, which is where Indianapolis is, about 250 precincts out of 600 have yet to report there. Among those that have reported, Hillary Clinton has 36% and Barack Obama 64%. But even more striking is Lake County, up in the northwestern corner of the state. This has the cities of Gary and Hammond and receives much of its media from Chicago and is much more familiar with Barack Obama. It is also one of the more African-American-dominated parts of the Democratic political scene in Indiana. And there we have no precincts reporting yet out of 560. So it seems not illogical that we would expect to see a pretty sizable Obama vote coming from Lake County in the minutes and hours yet to go. And that may explain why there's been so much hesitation to call this race, even though Hillary Clinton would seem to have a substantial lead.
And if Hillary Clinton were hoping for a blowout or at least a sizable win in Indiana to counteract what appears to be an Obama blowout in North Carolina, how likely is it she's going to get that?
Well, it doesn't seem to be moving in that direction. We have almost 70% of the vote in now, and while she did have a potential blowout building earlier, it's been moving in the other direction now for about the last 30 minutes.
Ron, what do you make of the results that we've seen from North Carolina?
Racially polarized, of course, and to some degree reflective of the differences between the Middle West and the Great Lakes region, which has been moving towards Hillary Clinton in recent weeks, and the voting results we saw earlier in the Mid-Atlantic region along the coast but not deep south. We saw, for example, Maryland, the District of Columbia, and Virginia all go heavily for Barack Obama. And back on Super Tuesday, the state of Georgia, a little further down south, also went for Barack Obama. And South Carolina, way back in January, went very heavily for Barack Obama. When it was still a three-person race, he won there with more than 55% of the vote. So this region along the Atlantic, stretching down from the Baltimore-Washington area all the way to the Florida line, has really been quite solid for Barack Obama.
Ron, I just have a question. We've been talking about the results. The results that were still final results we're still waiting for in Indiana, but both in Indiana and North Carolina. What's at stake in terms of the number of delegates that both of these candidates hope to walk away with at the end of the day?
Probably not a dramatic change in terms of the delegate relationship and pledged delegates. 187 at stake tonight. And we're going to see, I believe, Barack Obama coming to the stage here in the next few moments.
He is coming to address his supporters in Raleigh. He's making his way through the crowd. It tends to take a while to get there as he shakes hands, so we can keep talking for a bit. We'll bring you the speech when he begins to speak.
Well, it would appear that Barack Obama is going to get perhaps 10 more delegates or 12 or 15 more delegates out of North Carolina, depending on the final margin. Whereas in Indiana, where we're not clear on the final margin, she could have as many as 6 or 7 or 8 more than Barack Obama, unless that margin continues to close up, in which case it may be very close to even.
And then it all turns again to the superdelegates. We've been talking about them, it seems now, for weeks or maybe months.
Interesting to note that after tonight, 187 delegates available tonight, there are only 217 more pledged delegates on the table to get by the time this process comes to a final end. So there are now more superdelegates out there, uncommitted, yet to be won, than there are pledged delegates at stake.
I think we're going to have time. It looks like Barack Obama has a little ways to go before he starts talking, so I'm going to venture a question about Florida and Michigan, which is still the big unresolved issue. If Hillary Clinton stays in the campaign, she wants those delegates seated. How does this get resolved?
Bigger than any primary or caucus left in this process is the meeting of the Rules Committee of the Democratic National Committee on May 31st, the last day of this month, a Saturday. They're going to meet all day, and they're going to try to resolve at least the Florida matter. And whatever is done with Florida, of course, will be very important to the final decision made about Michigan. Everyone agrees they want to seat the delegates from these states. They don't know how to apportion them between the candidates.
And Barack Obama is at the podium. He was on stage a minute ago with his wife. She's left the stage. He's alone at the podium, ready to address the crowd. We have just a minute, I guess, before he actually begins his address. He's thanking the crowd. We all know that's a process that can take several minutes while he lets the crowd sort of build up and chant. A lot of people in the room waving those signs that many of us are now familiar with. Change, we can believe in. They're at the Reynolds Coliseum at North Carolina State. There again, revving up the crowd. Barack Obama spent the day in Indiana before he headed to North Carolina.
I love you back. I truly do. I want to thank Kim Wins for that wonderful introduction, to the outstanding members of the North Carolina congressional delegation who supported me through thick and thin, the Dean, Representative David Price, and his wife Lisa, Congressman Mel Watt, Congressman G.K. Butterfield, thank you so much. To James Oblinger, Chancellor of North Carolina State University, Wolfpack.
Now, we're listening to this on the radio. If you happen to be watching this, what you see is a tableau in back of Barack Obama that's very familiar. A multi-ethnic crowd behind him. It seemed like they're very careful to send this message while the two candidates run battle over who can win, who can reach out across the aisle, who can reach various groups. Both campaigns seem to be very careful about trying to send this message that we can attract, or that they can attract, all kinds of people. That's the argument that they make.
Yes, sometimes it appears at a moment like this that the respective candidates have attempted to surround themselves with the voters of the other candidate, at least demographically, in terms of probability.
And let's listen to Barack Obama speaking now in North Carolina.
But today, what North Carolina decided is that the only game that needs changing is the one in Washington, D.C. I want to start by congratulating Senator Clinton on what appears to be her victory in the great state of Indiana. I want to thank all the people, I want to thank all the wonderful people of Indiana who worked so hard on our behalf. The people in Indiana could not be finer. They worked tirelessly, and I will always be grateful to them. I want to thank, of course, the people of North Carolina. I want to thank them for giving us a victory in a big state. In a swing state. In a state where we will compete to win if I am the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. You know, when this campaign began, Washington didn't give us too much of a chance. But because you came out in the bitter cold and knocked on doors and enlisted your friends and neighbors in this cause, because you stood up to the cynics and the doubters and the naysayers when we were up and when we were down, because you still believe that this is our moment and our time to change America. Tonight, we stand less than 200 delegates away from securing the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. More importantly, because of you, we've seen that it's possible to overcome the politics of division and the politics of distraction, that it's possible to overcome the same old negative attacks that are always about scoring points and never about solving our problems. We've seen that the American people aren't looking for more spin. They're looking for honest answers about the challenges we face. That's what you've accomplished in this campaign, and that's how, together, we intend to change this country. This has been one of the longest, most closely fought contests in American history. And that's partly because we have such a formidable opponent in Senator Hillary Clinton. Tonight, many of the pundits have suggested that this party is inalterably divided, that Senator Clinton's supporters will not support me and that my supporters would not support her. Well, I'm here tonight to tell you that I don't believe it. Yes, there have been bruised feelings on both sides. Yes, each side desperately wants their candidate to win. But ultimately, this race is not about Hillary Clinton. It's not about Barack Obama. It's not about John McCain. This election is about you, the American people. It's about whether we will have a president and a party that can lead us toward a brighter future. This primary season may not be over, but when it is, we will have to remember who we are as Democrats, that we are the party of Jefferson and Jackson, of Roosevelt and Kennedy, and that we are at our best when we lead with principle, when we lead with conviction, when we summon an entire nation to a common purpose and a higher purpose. This fall, we intend to march forward as one Democratic Party, united by a common vision for this country, because we all agree that at this defining moment in our history, a moment when we are facing two wars, an economy in turmoil, a planet in peril, a dream that feels like it's slipping away for too many Americans. We can't afford to give John McCain the chance to serve out George Bush's third term. We need change in America, and that's why we will be united in November. I met in Indiana who just lost her job, lost her pension, lost her health insurance when the plant where she'd worked her entire life closed down. She can't afford four more years of tax breaks for corporations like the one that shipped her jobs overseas. She needs us to give tax breaks to companies that create good jobs right here in the United States of America. She can't afford four more years of tax breaks for CEOs like the one who walked away from her company with a multi-million dollar bonus. She needs middle-class tax relief of the sort I've proposed, relief that will help her pay the skyrocketing price of groceries and gas and college tuition. And that's why I'm running for President of the United States of America. The college student I met in Iowa who works the night shift after a full day of class and still can't pay the medical bills for a sister who's ill. She can't afford four more years of a health care plan that only takes care of the healthy and the wealthy, that allows insurance companies to discriminate and deny coverage to those Americans who need it most. She needs us to stand up to those insurance companies and pass a plan that lowers every family's premiums and gives every uninsured American the same kind of coverage that members of Congress gives themselves. That's why I'm running for President of the United States of America. The mother The mother in Wisconsin who gave me a bracelet inscribed with the name of the son she lost in Iraq. The families who pray for their loved ones to come home. The heroes on their third and fourth and fifth tour of duty. They can't afford four more years of a war that should have never been authorized and should have never been waged. They can't afford four more years of our veterans returning to broken-down barracks and substandard care, and they don't want to see homeless veterans on the streets. They don't want to see veterans waiting years to get disability payments or having to travel for hours and miles just to get treatment. They need us to end a war that isn't making us safer. They need us to treat them with the care and respect they deserve. That's why I'm running for president. The man I met in Pennsylvania who lost his job but can't even afford the gas to drive around and look for a new one. He can't afford four more years of an energy policy written by the oil companies and for the oil companies. A policy that's not only keeping gas at record prices, but funding both sides of the war on terror and destroying our planet. He doesn't need four more years of Washington policies that sound good but don't solve the problem. He needs us to take a permanent holiday from our addiction from oil by making the automakers raise their fuel standards, corporations pay for their pollution, and oil companies invest their record profits in a clean energy future. That's the change we need. That's why I'm running for president of the United States of America. The people that I've met in small towns and big cities across this country understand that government can't solve all our problems, and we don't expect it to. We believe in hard work. We believe in personal responsibility and self-reliance. But we also believe that we have a larger responsibility to one another as Americans, that America is a place, that America is the place where you can make it if you try, that no matter how much money you start with or where you come from or who your parents are, opportunity is yours if you're willing to reach for it and work for it. It's the idea that while there are few guarantees in life, you should be able to count on a job that pays the bills. Health care for when you need it, a pension when you retire, an education for your children that will allow them to fulfill their God-given potential. That's the America we believe in. That's the America that we know. This is the country that gave my grandfather a chance to go to college on the GI Bill when he came home from World War II. A country that gave him and my grandmother the chance to buy their first home with a loan from the FHA. This is the country that made it possible for my mother, a single parent who had to go on food stamps at one point, to send my sister and me to the best schools in the country on scholarships. This is the country that allowed my father-in-law, a shift worker, a city worker at a water filtration plant in Chicago, to provide for his wife and two children on a single salary. Now, this is a man who was diagnosed at the age of 30 with multiple sclerosis, who relied on a walker to get himself to work, and yet every day he went and he labored and he sent my wife and her brother to one of the best colleges in the nation. And when he talked about his job, he expressed that it was important not just because it gave him a paycheck, but because it described his dignity, his self-worth, his self-respect. It was an America that didn't just reward wealth, but it rewarded work and the workers who created it. That's the America I love. That's the America you love. That's the America that we are fighting for in this election. Somewhere along the line, between all the bickering and the influence peddling and the game playing of the last few decades, Washington and Wall Street have lost touch with these core values, these American values. And while I honor John McCain's service to his country, his ideas for America are out of touch with these core values. His plans for the future of continuing a war that has not made us safer, of continuing George Bush's economic policies that he claims have made great progress, these are nothing more than the failed policies of the past. His plan to win in November appears to come from the very same playbook that his side has used time after time in election after election. Yes, we know what's coming. I'm not naive. We've already seen it. The same names and labels they always pin on everyone who doesn't agree with all their ideas. The same efforts to distract us from the issues that affect our lives by pouncing on every gaffe and association and fake controversy in the hopes that the media will play along. The attempts to play on our fears and exploit our differences, to turn us against each other for political gain, to slice and dice this country into red states and blue states, blue collar and white collar, white, black, brown, young, old, rich, poor. This is the race we expect, no matter whether it's myself or Senator Clinton who is the nominee. The question then is not what kind of campaign they will run, it's what kind of campaign we will run. It's what we will do to make this year different. You see, I didn't get into this race thinking that I could avoid this kind of politics, but I am running for president because this is the time to end it. We will end it this time not because I'm perfect. I think we know at this phase of the campaign that I am not. We will end it not by duplicating the same tactics and the same strategies as the other side, because that will lead us down the same path of polarization and of gridlock. We will end it by telling the truth. We will end it by telling the truth forcefully, repeatedly, confidently, and by trusting that the American people will embrace the need for change, even if it's coming from an imperfect messenger. Because that's how we've always changed this country. Not from the top down, but from the bottom up. When you, the American people, decide that the stakes are too high and the challenges are too great. The other side can label and name call all they want, but I trust the American people to recognize that it is not surrender to end the war in Iraq so that we can rebuild our military and go after al-Qaeda's leaders. I trust the American people to understand that it is not weakness but wisdom to talk not just to our friends but to our enemies, like Roosevelt did and Kennedy did and Truman did. I trust the American people to realize that while we don't need big government, we do need a government that stands up for families who are being tricked out of their homes by Wall Street predators. A government who stands up for the middle class by giving them a tax break. A government that ensures that no American will ever lose their life savings just because their child gets sick. Security and opportunity Compassion and prosperity aren't liberal values. They are not conservative values. They are American values, and that is what we are fighting for in this election. Most of all, I trust the American people's desire to no longer be defined by differences. Because no matter where I've been in this country, whether it was in the cornfields of Iowa or the textile mills of the Carolinas, the streets of San Antonio or the foothills of Georgia, I've found that while we may have different stories, we hold common hopes. We may not look the same or come from the same place, but we want to move in the same direction towards a better future for our children and our grandchildren. That's why I'm in this race. I love this country too much to see it divided and distracted at this critical moment in history. I believe in our ability to perfect this nation because it's the only reason I'm standing here today. I know the promise of America because I've lived it. Michelle has lived it. You have lived it. It is the light of opportunity that led my father across an ocean. It's the founding ideals that the flag draped over my father's coffin stand for. It is life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. It's the simple truth I learned all those years ago when I worked in the shadow of all those shuttered steel mills on the south side of Chicago. That in this country, justice can be won against the greatest odds. Hope can find its way back from the darkest of corners. And when we are told that we cannot bring about the change that we seek, we answer with one voice. Yes, we can. So, North Carolina and America, don't ever forget that this election is not about me or any candidate. Don't ever forget that this campaign is about you. It's about your hopes. It's about your dreams. It's about your struggles. It's about your aspirations. It's about securing your portion of the American dream. Don't ever forget that we have a choice in this country, that we can choose not to be divided, that we can choose not to be afraid, that we can still choose this moment to finally come together and solve the problems we've talked about all those other years in all those other elections. This time can be different than all the rest. This time we can face down those who say our road is too long, that our climb is too steep, that we can no longer achieve the change that we seek. This is our time to answer the call that so many generations of Americans have answered before, by insisting that by hard work and by sacrifice, the American dream will endure. Thank you. Thank you, North Carolina. May God bless you and the United States of America. Thank you.
That's Barack Obama at his election night rally in Raleigh, North Carolina, at Reynolds Coliseum on the campus of North Carolina State University. Barack Obama has won handily in North Carolina today. The election returns from Indiana still being counted. Barack Obama in that speech making his call for unity, as he has throughout this campaign, also saying that his victory in North Carolina and his hopes for the campaign is that it will represent a defeat for the politics of distraction and gimmicks. Also, interestingly, and we're going to bring NPR's Ron Elving in here, Ron, he very early on in the speech, almost the first thing he said was that he wanted to congratulate Hillary Clinton on what appears to be her victory in Indiana, again, a race that has not yet been called.
I have never seen a candidate concede a race that had not been called against him by very many people or by the preponderance of people watching it at this hour. In fact, the lead that Hillary Clinton does maintain in Indiana has shrunk throughout the last hour and is now down to 4 points, 52% to 48%, with a little over 70% of the vote counted. But, of course, what makes it interesting is not just those numbers, but the missing votes. The missing votes in Indiana seem to be in Lake County, home to Gary and Hammond, in the Chicago media area in the far northwest, one of the most African-American parts of the state, and we have no vote yet. from that particular county. So if the vote there is comparable to, say, the Indianapolis vote, which is going 2-1 for Obama, 67%, this race could tighten up further. Nonetheless, most people, I think, still expect her to eke out a win in Indiana, and Barack Obama was moved to concede the race in Indiana to her in the very early part of his remarks.
Let's bring our analysts into this discussion, too. E.J. Dionne with The Washington Post and Ramesh Panuru with National Review. Barack Obama started this speech by taking some language from the Clinton campaign. He said some were saying that North Carolina would be a game changer in this election. Today, what North Carolina decided is that the only game that needs changing is the one in Washington, D.C. Ramesh, what about that language, changing the game? The game has been changed or not?
Well, of course, he was referring to Hillary Clinton saying that that would be the game changer. And I think the game may have changed in Obama's favor tonight, both because I think there's going to be more of a desire to get this race beyond to get over with this race, and also because he seems to have won a more convincing victory in North Carolina than she is likely to win in Indiana if she wins at all.
You know, it was interesting. He also said that no matter who wins, this talk about the party being very divided, he said the real goal is to beat John McCain, and basically saying that my supporters, his supporters, would support Hillary Clinton is essentially what he's saying, that, you know, to the argument that some of the Democratic Party are worried about, that they won't cross over and vote for Hillary Clinton.
And he also goes on to say in his speech that the Republicans are going to run the same kind of division, the same kind of distracting attacks on either Democratic candidate.
EJ, I noticed you scribbling when he uttered one line in particular with a bit of force. I love this country, Barack Obama said.
Yes, I was scribbling, and during a lot of that speech, this speech tonight showed, I think, that Obama's back. I mean, for weeks he has been looking tired, and tonight he looked fresh. He had a fresh speech here, and what he did is it sounded like a general election speech where he was directly going at the attacks on him. When he said, God bless you, God bless America, no more talk about bitter voters that got him into all that trouble. I was really struck by the following line: the same efforts to distract us from the issues that affect our lives by pouncing on every gaffe and association and fake controversy in the hopes that the media will play along, efforts to exploit our fears and differences. This is language, really, where Obama is pushing back against all the things that have been thrown at him in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I think what he's going to try to do is to take the negative campaign that has been and will be waged against him and turn it right back onto the Republicans, so that after a really sluggish period, I think Obama will take this night, and it's a very good night for him. Ramesh is right. Mrs. Clinton needed a big night, and it just doesn't look like she got it. We will win decisively in North Carolina, and if she wins a victory in Indiana, it looks like it's going to be very narrow.
Interesting, too, that Barack Obama in that speech said that people embrace the need for change even if it's coming from an imperfect messenger, which I thought was a really sort of telling phrase that he used there, Ramesh, and alluding to, certainly when he talks about pouncing on associations, he's certainly referring to the controversy over his former pastor, Jeremiah Wright.
Well, that's right, and I think also one thing that he's doing, as EJ was saying, was he's responding to some of the criticisms of him. And one of the themes of the critics of Obama has been, oh, this is a messianic campaign. There's something sort of cult-like. And he is trying to detach himself from that aura and say, look, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying you have to fall in love with me. It's not about me.
And also, he's getting more and more populist, and he's trying to link this reform language to the economic anger and unease that's out there in the country. It was notable that he didn't just say that Washington is out of touch. He said Washington and Wall Street are out of touch. That's a clear message to some of those blue-collar white voters who voted for Clinton today, whom he wants to get to vote for him in November.
Ron, it's interesting. I mean, you're allowed, I suppose, a fair dose of hyperbole in a victory speech, but interesting that Barack Obama referred to North Carolina as a swing state.
Yes, and of course, it has not actually been a swing state in presidential politics for over 30 years. 1976, Jimmy Carter was the last person who won it at the presidential level. However, it has had Democratic governors. It has occasionally had Democratic senators, such as John Edwards. It has more Democrats in the House delegation than it has had in some while. And it still does fairly well for Democrats at the legislative level. So it's a swing state in the sense that, say, Mississippi might not be considered one, or Alabama.
Interesting night and more to come. Ron, thanks so much. That's NPR's senior political editor, Ron Elving. Also, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Ramesh Panuru of National Review. And we're awaiting a speech by Hillary Clinton, who is supposed to be soon addressing her supporters in Indianapolis.
And while we await that speech, we have a chance to check in with a senior campaign strategist for Senator Hillary Clinton. Jeff Guerin joins us now by phone. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Good evening.
Now, you're still waiting on those final results in Indiana. Now, this was a state that the Clinton campaign had placed a lot of importance in, placed a big stake in. President Clinton, in fact,
both campaigns, really.
Well, I just want to say that President Clinton, in campaigning in the state, had said that Hillary Clinton needs to win and win strongly in Indiana to move forward.
It's an important state for both campaigns. Senator Obama, not too long ago, said that predicted that we would win in Pennsylvania, and he was right about that. He predicted that he would win in North Carolina, and for better or worse, he turned out to be right about that and said that Indiana would be the tiebreaker. And we're expecting the tie to go Senator Clinton's way, and we think it will be a tiebreaker. We think it'll continue the momentum she's had coming out of Pennsylvania, and we look forward to going on from here.
Now, with more than 70% of the precincts reporting, the race seems to be tightening. Why didn't Hillary Clinton do better in Indiana?
Well, you know, just 10 days ago, we were about 8 points behind in Indiana. This is a state where about a quarter of the voters are in Senator Obama's home media market. This was always an uphill climb for us, and to come out on top, as we expect to, is an important accomplishment.
An uphill climb and up the rough side of the mountain also. Senator Barack Obama has the lead in pledge delegates. Explain for us, what exactly is Senator Clinton's path to the nomination?
Well, our path to the nomination is to continue. We've got a contest next week in West Virginia, where we expect to do very well. We have the week after that, Kentucky and Oregon, where we're competing hard in both of those states.
Competing, but it would be very hard to catch Senator Obama in terms of pledged delegates. So how do you get to the actual nomination? How do you see that deal?
We're pretty sure that nobody will emerge from June 3rd with enough delegates of any sort to have the nomination secured. And then both campaigns will have the burden of making the case to the remaining uncommitted delegates about who will be the best nominee for our party and the best president. And we think at that stage, Senator Clinton will have a very compelling case to make,
and how,
both
how
in terms
you...
of the momentum over the over these past races in March, April, May, and into June.
Jeff,
and,
I'm sorry to...
just in terms of the quality of the campaign. So.
I'm sorry to step on you there, but time is tight. I just want to know, since you're talking about making the case, you're going to be one of the people that's actually dialing for delegates. How do you make that case? What do you say right now?
Well, I think that, you know, we saw again in Indiana that Senator Clinton is much more successful in appealing to the kinds of people who are swing voters in general elections, particularly blue-collar and middle-income voters. They, again, in Indiana, voted decisively for Senator Clinton. We're disappointed in the outcome in North Carolina. We're particularly disappointed we didn't do better with African American voters. We made an effort, but the closest state to North Carolina in terms of the composition of the electorate is in Virginia, right above North Carolina. And compared to that outcome, she made really important strides with both white men and white women voters. And so that we think our campaign is moving in the right direction, and among the on the crucial issue of the economy, and among the crucial swing voters, I think there's a very strong and persuasive case that she offers a lot more to the Democratic Party in terms of a victory in the fall, and offers more to the country.
Jeff Guerin, when are we going to actually hear from Senator Clinton?
Well, we want to wait for more of the votes to be counted. CBS has already declared Senator Clinton the victor, but we want to make sure this is all put to bed before she goes out there.
Okay, so you're saying stay tuned. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Guerin. He's a senior campaign strategist for Senator Hillary Clinton.
And now to a superdelegate who recently switched his support from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama. Joe Andrew is a former chair of the Democratic National Committee. He has said it's time for the party to unite around a single candidate. He's from Indiana, and he joins us now from Washington, D.C. Mr. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We heard Jeff Guerin there talking about Hillary Clinton making strides among white men, white women, the crucial swing voters. Do you read these returns the same way?
No, and I don't think anyone who looks at the math can read them the same way. Not only was this a extremely large win for Barack Obama in North Carolina, but we've got a cliffhanger in Indiana. And it's a cliffhanger because it's not white, lower-income Democrats you have to win in a general election. It's white, lower-income independents you have to win. And the Clinton campaign may do spin. I was part of it, so I know how well they can spin. But the fact is I think what you heard from Barack Obama tonight was the first speech of the general election. Because I believe that superdelegates like myself, who've been inspired by him, who've watched him take on these tough issues over the past couple of weeks, are now going to begin to coalesce around him, and I think believe we'll have a presumptive nominee soon.
Have you heard from superdelegates tonight, even, who have said much the same thing that you're saying right now, that they are now poised to turn to Barack Obama?
I have, and while I think you will see over the, again, coming weeks, coming days, maybe even coming hours, you'll see some more superdelegates who will say, the time has come now. We have two great candidates here. They've waged a great battle. But in the end of the day, the math is very simple here, and Barack Obama has not only won more votes, more contests, but most importantly, he has more delegates.
Are you going so far as to say that Hillary Clinton should drop out of the race?
No, it's not a question of asking someone to drop out of the race. It's really a question of focusing not on what she should do, but what the superdelegates should do. The vast majority of superdelegates are from states that had elections weeks and even months ago. In fact, the biggest block of superdelegates are from California, which, again, had an election quite a time ago. The question for them now is, you know, will they come clean? Will they say who they're going to support and get about the business of taking on John McCain in the fall?
Very briefly, are you worried about the divisions within the Democratic Party in that general election campaign?
I'm certainly worried if this continues. I think we are really at a point here that we can clearly come back from the brink, that there's plenty of opportunities for us to be able to coalesce around Barack Obama. But there's no question if this were to go on long into the summer, all the way to the convention in August, as a former national chair of the party, that would certainly concern me.
Okay, Joe Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joe Andrew, a former chair of the Democratic National Committee and a superdelegate who recently switched his support from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama.
And you're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
I'm Melissa Block, and recapping where we are with today's primary results, Barack Obama again has won handily in North Carolina. In Indiana, though, too early to call that race. Now, with about 78% of precincts reporting, Hillary Clinton has a 4 percentage point lead over Barack Obama. We are joined now by Tad Devine. He's a Democratic strategist not affiliated with either of the campaigns and also an expert on the party's elaborate delegate system. Mr. Devine, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be with you.
We have turned to you many times on these primary nights, and now we're with you again. You have said before that you didn't see this going all the way to the convention, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That's right.
Do you think, are you more convinced of that than ever, given tonight's results?
Yes, I am. I think tonight was a very big victory for Barack Obama. He won the biggest state. He seems to have won it decisively. He's made a huge step ahead in terms of the delegate count. It looks like when all the delegates accounted from today's voting, he'll be up over 1,800 delegates. That's only about 200 away from what he needs. And so I think he's really on the path to the nomination now.
And he would need, though, a significant number of superdelegates to say, okay, now's the time. I'm going in Obama's camp. The superdelegates who are uncommitted so far.
That's right. And I think these superdelegates have been waiting for the moment when perhaps this race reached a tipping point. And I think that many of them may now conclude that Obama's nomination is almost inevitable, and that it would be good for them to step forward.
And in terms of Hillary Clinton, what would you say her position should be?
Well, Senator Clinton has had an incredibly impressive campaign, and she has won more votes and more delegates than any challenger has in history. So I think, you know, they have to look at what's coming up. Certainly next week in West Virginia looks very good for them. After that, Kentucky as well. They have to make a decision. Do they want to stay in this thing till the voting is over, or do they want to look at the numbers right now and conclude that she simply can't get to the nomination? I suspect that they're going to want to stay and fight and probably wait till the end when the voting is over. It's just a question of what is the tone and tenor of the campaign between now and then.
Okay, Ted Devine, thanks so much.
Good to be with you.
That's Democratic strategist Ted Devine.
We turn now to Andy Cohut of the Pew Center for the People and the Public. Andy, as you're looking at these results coming in, still too early to actually call this race in Indiana. A few key precincts, regions of the state, we haven't seen results. One of those is in that upper corner in Indiana, that area that hugs very tight against the Chicago metropolitan area.
Yeah, and you would expect that the composition of that area may be heavily African-American. On the other hand, there may be some white working class voters in there. But one of the things that really comes through in both of these states that may lead to this much diminished margin for Hillary Clinton is the extent to which she's still operating with a credibility gap. In Indiana, where she's at least leading by a margin of 66%, over 50 to 54%, Obama is seen as the more honest and trustworthy candidate. And in North Carolina, it's even bigger. So here we have a time when Obama was under a lot of pressure, 46-47% each state saying that Reverend Wright was an issue for them, late deciders going to her. But still, that credibility crisis hangs in as something that holds her back, if not drags her down. That comes true pretty clearly in this exit poll.
Now, Senator Obama has the lead in pledge delegates. Hillary Clinton, though, has continued to make the case with the super delegates that she has won the big states, that she's carried white working class voters in households that earn less than $50,000, that she's carried older voters, reliable voters that are expected to show up in a general election. Can she continue to make that argument after this evening?
It's going to be tougher without a convincing win in Indiana if it turns out that she doesn't.
And by convincing,
have,
you mean?
I mean a substantial margin, more than 5 or 6 points. And if you look at the national polls and you pull them apart by the size of state, you really don't see any evidence that the big states are really better for her or the small states are better for him when we test the two candidates against John McCain.
I want to bring E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Ramesh Panuru of National Review into this. We're talking about this evening, looking at the results, the expected results in Indiana, as journalists, superdelegates are watching this also. They're all important in this right now. Ramesh, as superdelegates look at this, what do they see this evening?
I think superdelegates are likely to reach the same conclusion that Joe Andrew did when he flipped from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama. And, of course, a lot of these superdelegates haven't publicly announced one way or the other, but I think it's going to them, look more and more as though Obama is now the inevitable nominee. Everybody thought Hillary was back last year. I think they're going to start moving towards them even more than they already have.
And we're expecting that we've all been saying all along that for some Democrats, this causes a certain amount of heartburn, that they'd like this thing to be over. But is there a wing of the party that believes that this is actually good, that as this race continues, that a lot of people are bought into this process with the excitement with each primary, one after the other?
I think that was true until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. In other words, I think the process clearly has created more registered Democrats, brought a lot of young people in the process. I think all that was true. But in recent weeks, I think what it's done is brought down both candidates, Obama because of these attacks and Clinton because her attacks on him have hurt her credibility, as Andy pointed out
now,
before.
I have to say to you, EJ, though, you have a column in today's paper that says that this fight, as scrappy as it's been, has actually brought out the best in the candidates to some degree.
Well, I think it brought out a new Hillary Clinton toward the end, who is a much more effective Hillary Clinton than the one who started the campaign. And in terms of Barack Obama, I think he had been on a downward path until the last 3 or 4 days when he really finally came out fighting again. And tonight, it's that new Obama, which is really the old, inspiring Obama, who came out again. And in terms of the superdelegates, I think they've been waiting to end this for a long time. They were waiting for Barack Obama to beat her in the popular vote in Texas. He didn't do it. They were waiting to see how he did in Pennsylvania. She won big. I think tonight, for a good number of them, it's going to be the time where they can say, okay, her chances now are really very small of overtaking Obama on any relevant count, including the popular vote.
Just very quickly, Ramesh, you said at one point that there will be pressure placed on Hillary Clinton at this point to drop out of the race. Who's going to bring that pressure to bear? Who could actually step in and make that argument to her?
There are a number of superdelegates who could, who, if they publicly announced for Obama, could make a real difference. And Al Gore is at the top of everybody's list, but also Nancy Pelosi, also John Edwards.
Okay, thanks to you both, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post, Ramesh Pinero of National Review, and Andy Kohut of the Pew Research Center. And again, to recap tonight's Democratic primary results, Senator Barack Obama has won a decisive victory in the North Carolina primary, and we are still waiting for final results in Indiana, a state that's considered essential for Hillary Clinton to win to sustain her campaign. She is leading at this point with about 80% of precincts reporting. She's leading by 4 percentage points. Obama leads in the overall delegate count, and he has been gaining on Hillary Clinton among superdelegates.
Voters said they were worried about the economy, which has been a growing concern during this very long primary year that has supplanted worries about the war in Iraq among many Democrats. Our election coverage will continue tonight on some NPR stations and with a special political call-in show. And as always, you can follow the political season at our website, npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.